Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Yes, indeed. Of course, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Our number at the clinic, 8556-VERITAS. And let me say good morning once again to a Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade. How are you this morning?
I am doing well. Of course, we have a special guest with us today on the phone. And we'll have a, I guess you'll introduce our guest and talk about, and the topic, what we're going to talk about today on the show.
Yes, sir.
Which will be cool. So, back, good to see you back. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Wade. Appreciate you having us again this week.
You bet.
I'm really excited and honored to have this guest today, Jimmy Moore. You know, we've had a lot of MDs and PhDs and all these really smart guys on the show the last many months. And Jimmy's not a doctor, but I can tell you this, I've learned more from Jimmy Moore in regards to cholesterol, nutrition, diet than just about anyone else. So I love what Jimmy's story and what he teaches, what he brings to the public through his podcast and his books and website and stuff. So real quick intro here for Jimmy Moore. He really kind of catapulted onto the health scene in way back in 2004 after he had a 180-pound weight loss. And he was able to get off a lot of his prescription meds for cholesterol and blood pressure and stuff like that.
184 pounds?
180 pounds.
180 pounds.
Yeah.
That's like losing a whole person.
Yeah.
Big person.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Wow.
And then the health benefits, obviously, that come with that. So since then, he's kind of done a lot of things, but this very popular blog for those listeners who are kind of into what we preach at Veritas Medical, which is kind of low-carb living, he's got a blog called Living La Vida Low Carb. Also, he's a professional podcaster, Living La Vida Low Carb show and podcast. He's written a book, Keto Clarity, Cholesterol Clarity. We have both of these books for sale at my clinic because, again, they bring such a clear message of truth because there's been so much, I don't know if I want to say deception, but just misinformation and ignorance regarding diet and cholesterol. So that's what we're going to talk about today from Jimmy's perspective as a patient, as someone who had to kind of get educated on his own and now is educating the masses. And again, I would say a lot of colleagues of mine could use the knowledge and information that Jimmy has learned. So Jimmy, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey guys, no, I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on the radio either. So.
Well, that's what I love. You know, I give lectures, and the disclaimer I give at the beginning of my lectures now is, beware, because I was trained by the U.S. medical system, which consistently ranks dead last in health outcomes, including longevity and infant mortality and chronic disease, and number of dollars we spend is more than anybody. So this huge healthcare industry that we're all a part of, but now getting out of personally, produces horrible results. So you kind of got to raise your eyebrows a little bit. If you took your car to the mechanic and the mechanic's car is always broken down, you kind of want to wonder what's going on here. So we produce consistently poor outcomes in the U.S. medical model. The dietary guidelines that get pushed out by the American Heart Association and others have a poor track record. And one thing I want to get into here in a minute with Jimmy is I always quote this, and I don't know if it's urban legend or if it's true, but I tell people Jimmy Moore turned the food pyramid upside down and went and told Congress that they needed to do the same thing in order
that
to lose that.
True story.
Awesome.
That's a true story. It was in 2010 2010, all the years run together after a while, but 2010, I went to Washington, D.C., and I was one of two normal people that was testifying before the USDA Dietary Advisory Committee. I say normal people because everybody else was paid to be there and was reading from a script.
Wow.
There was one other lady who was just driving through town and said, oh, yeah, I'll testify before the USDA. And she's like, yeah, we need to eat real food and we need to get back to the way it was and get away from, dietary recommendations from the government, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wow. So when I get up there, I tell my story, and I told them, I said, yeah, I did the exact opposite of everything that you've been telling us to do for the past 3 decades, and I got healthy.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, and that's where I want to start. I want you to, and I know you've told this story probably a million times, Jimmy. You've been in this for since 04, and we're out here in West Texas. I feel like, most of the audience, most of the population out here still is in that old mindset. And I'd say most of the population around the country probably still in the old mindset of low fat and, sugar-free stuff and eating all this processed food. So kind of tell your story, how you grew up under your parents' tutelage in the kitchen and what that resulted in, and just how you got to where you are now, if you don't mind briefly.
Under my parents' tutelage in the kitchen. I love the phrase of that because it's so hilarious because I had no tutelage in the kitchen.
Right.
I actually grew up in a split home. I was born in Tennessee, and my mom decides to divorce my dad when I was like 1 and a half and then moves to Florida. So, I didn't get a whole lot of teaching early on. I was a very big boy when I was born. My mom had severe insulin resistance, probably gestational diabetes while she had me. And when I was born, I was almost 11 pounds. Mm. So my genetics from the very start kind of put me in a bad position of, okay, you're going to have to deal with this issue for the rest of your life, big boy. grew up. Mom was a single mom there for a little while, and we ate the typical low-income household food. So Doritos and Blueberry Crunch and Coca-Cola and all these things. And I was a kid of the 80s, and so
yeah.
Mama bought into all the fat-free stuff at the exact same time. And so she had rice cakes and fat-free ice cream and Diet Coke and all these things. My brother Kevin and I used to try to put peanut butter on top of the rice cakes to see if it made them taste better. No, they still taste like
whatever. Nice.
So that was kind of the, the environment that I grew up in. And it was junk food centric. And of course, it's so funny because people are like, well, when you got out on your own as an adult, you should know how to eat. I'm like, why would I know how to eat any other way than the way I'd eaten my whole life?
Right.
And so, of course, I go to college, and I eat whole pizzas. I'll buy, boxes of Little Debbie snack cakes and eat the whole box. I would have ramen noodles, which is the breakfast of champions for people in college, mm-hmm. and add cheese to it. And again, all this, what I now refer to as garbage, was going into this body. And so in my 20s, I ballooned up to over 400 pounds. And what's funny is I never realized how bad it had gotten until I stepped on the scale January 1st, 2004, and I saw a 4 as the first number.
Mm.
That's a scary thought, you guys. So
yeah.
I knew I needed to do something. But the problem was every time I wanted to lose weight, I always defaulted to the mommy diet. Because mama always went on a low-fat diet when she wanted to get healthy and lose weight. So what did her son do? Again, what did I learn? Cut your fat, eat healthy whole grains, exercise on the treadmill, blah, blah, blah. And I had done that again and again and again. And what's that old saying that Albert Einstein said? When you do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result, what's that called? Oh, yeah, insanity. Mm-hmm. So I was being literally insane with the way I was treating my body. Until I got a lovely book for Christmas from a lovely lady. It was a diet book, and it was from my mother-in-law.
Those sweet mother-in-law gifts. You got to love them.
Yes.
Well, did that make you feel warm and fuzzy all over?
Oh, my goodness. What's funny is she had given me diet books every single year for Christmas. I think one year I got Dr. Phil's book, Today Can Be a Changing Day in Your Life. No, Dr. Phil, it's still a low-fat diet. It's not going to change my life.
Yeah. Well, what was different about this one this year, that year you got that one?
Yeah, so it was 2003, and it was Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution. And what's funny is I just learned the story of how they chose that book for me. Her and my father-in-law were in the grocery store of all places, and they saw it sitting there, and they tried it, and they're like, oh, this is kind of fun. Maybe Jimmy would enjoy this. Now, keep in mind, they've been pushing rabbit food on me, and my wife would bawl her eyes out because she didn't want me to die and blah, 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 which real and present danger. So I appreciate that she had concern, but I needed answers. And so this book went literally against everything I'd ever had a preconceived notion about health. Eat more fat. This guy is a cardiologist that's writing this book, Dr. Atkins, and he's a cardiologist and telling people to eat the very thing that we know clogs your arteries and gives you heart disease. At least that's what we've always been told.
Mm-hmm.
And then eat more carbohydrates, or less carbohydrates, excuse me. Eat less carbohydrates? Wait a minute. How are you supposed to have any energy at all if you're not eating carbohydrates in your diet? And of course, whole grains are healthy. In fact, they put healthy whole grains. It's got to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm reading this book cover to cover between Christmas and New Year's, and I'm like, this guy is whacked out of his mind. But you know what? I have failed and failed and failed time after time, and I need to do something about my weight and, by extension, my health.
So you proceeded to do what the book said?
Yes, I read the book, and what's funny is people oftentimes today will say, oh, yeah, I do the keto diet, or I do the ketogenic diet, or I do the Atkins diet and low-carb diet, and I'm like, okay, what book did you read? Oh, I didn't read anything. I'm just eating meat, eggs, and cheese. I'm like, that's not the Atkins diet. Go back and read the book.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing ketogenic, go and read Keto Clarity. It's going to tell you exactly what you need to do, give you a little bit of hand-holding, because you can't just wing it.
Right.
You know, if you want to wing your diet, don't be surprised when your results are wrong as well.
Yeah, you can. I agree with that.
And we see that a lot out here. We're in, you know, well, it's cotton country, but it's cattle country. It's West Texas cowboy culture, and it's all about the beef. And people hear Atkins automatically. They're thinking high protein. I'm going to eat steak for breakfast, lunch, and supper, and they just get a tremendous amount of protein, which we might can talk about later. But that can change
into
sugar, and sugar jacks your insulin. But anyway, people have to be careful, especially out here, where Atkins may have a certain reputation that's not accurate.
Well, and here's the thing: I think the Atkins diet had one thing spot on, and that was keep your carbs low.
Right.
Because he realized early on that it's the carbohydrates that are spiking the insulin levels, and it's truly insulin being elevated that is at the heart of literally every chronic disease that we deal with today. And so he was spot on saying, start with 20 grams of carbohydrates and then work your way up to find your tolerance level, what level of carbs works for you. What he got wrong was, eat unlimited amounts of fat and protein. Of course, Dr. Atkins, when he said that, didn't expect people to go buy chicken breast and eat that with broccoli.
Right.
That's a very low-carb meal, yes, but it's very low in fat and very high in protein. And the protein is a negative in the diet when you eat it to excess.
Right.
And so excess is going to vary from person to person. The more insulin resistant you are, the less protein actually that you need. So, for example, I eat about 30 grams of carbohydrate. That's about the apex of my tolerance level, is 30 grams of total carbohydrates.
And then that's per day, right?
And that's per day.
Okay.
And then the protein is somewhere around 80 to 100 on days that I lift weights. I eat a little more protein just for that purpose, but on days that I'm not, I'm trying to stay around 80 grams. So 80 might be too much for somebody listening right now. 80 may be woefully inept for someone else. And so you kind of have to tinker and test and find what your level is right for you. And the reason that it's a problem in excess, and there will be a test at the end of the show, so stay tuned. Gluconeogenesis is this big, long G word. And basically what it means is when you eat protein in excess, that excess protein, you can't store protein in your body. You can only store fat and sugar and glucose. So it gets converted into glucose by the liver, the protein does, that excess protein. So what happens to that glucose, that sugar, once it gets converted? Well, number one, if you're trying to be ketogenic and burning fat for fuel, that stops immediately because your body has to deal with this glucose all of a sudden. So it will try to use it as energy. It will fill back up your glycogen stores. But then when that is tapped out, guess what happens to that excess glucose? It gets stored as body fat. And so I'm not saying that you can get fat from eating protein, but it certainly puts you in more of a propensity for going that direction than not.
Right. It's all about that insulin resistance. And if you're making excess sugar from protein, you're going to jack that insulin and lead to, and it obviously won't be as quick or a process as if you're eating processed carbs all day. But it's definitely, right, especially if you're a sick person or you're overweight, you're trying to reach some health goals, it's going to slow that thing down for sure. So back to the Atkins, you read the book, started doing what he recommended to do, and then what happened?
Yeah, so I started January 1st, 2004. It was my New Year's resolution to lose weight. What it quickly became was a new life resolution to get healthy. And my message started off as a weight loss message, but it has quickly turned into a health gain message. And I think far too many people, and I'm sure it's the same way in Texas, it's definitely here in South Carolina where I live, people obsessed about their weight. Yep. And they think everything about their health is predicated on their current weight. Can I just say something about that? I think that's the silliest thing in the world.
Yeah, I agree.
I think if you're eating a diet and you're living a lifestyle that's giving you health markers that are beyond belief, yes, your weight is important, but some of us have a little more challenges when it comes to the weight department. I think if you're one of those people, you have to focus on the health markers. You have to know what your triglycerides are. You have to know what your HDL cholesterol is. You have to know what your key inflammation markers are, like HSCRP and homocysteine. You have to know your fasting insulin level. All of these things are critically important to your health, and if they're in line and you happen to have some extra pounds on your body, who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I'm
with you 100%. I'm all about testing, looking for markers of inflammation, looking for these signs that we know are going to put you at increased risk for all sorts of diseases, and chasing an artificial number on the scale is not beneficial. In fact, it leads to, potentially could lead to, this stress, fight or flight, lack of peace, and that's a whole other thing we can get into later in the show, how that's going to tell you to store fat.
Do you ever incorporate any intermittent fasting at all when you had this massive weight loss situation? Did you look at intermittent fasting to help achieve that goal?
So let me get to the intermittent fasting here in a minute. So 2004, you asked about, I went on that Atkins diet, did it by the book, lost 30 pounds the first month, 40 right. pounds the second month, 100 pounds in 100 days, and had a bit of a gap in the middle where I didn't lose any weight for 10 weeks in a row, but I stuck with it because I was feeling good and coming off of those medications, and by the end of the year did lose the 180 pounds, got the attention of the Atkins people, and they posted my story on the front of their website, and I started a blog, Living La Vida Low Carb. Any Ricky Martin fans out there? Yeah, he's kind of a dated reference now. So
yeah.
Back in the day, it was kind of prescient.
Yeah, my kids are like, who's that, Dad?
I know, right? Dun, 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 dun. Okay, so I did that, and then a year later started, now what I'm most famous for is my podcast, The Living La Vida Low Carb Show, which is the longest-running health podcast on the internet. So intermittent fasting. I was the biggest opponent of IF, intermittent fasting, that you would have ever met, because I thought it was the stupidest thing in the world. Why would you purposely starve yourself? Why would you not eat for a period of time? That didn't make any sense to me at all. And it didn't make sense to me until I went full bore ketogenic. And when I went ketogenic and truly dialed in the protein, of course the carbs had always been low with Atkins, but when I dialed in the protein, the hunger went away. When I started adding in more healthy fats, the hunger just dissipated. Satiety signals kicked in, and I forgot to eat. Now, keep in mind, my history, I used to drink 16 cans of Coca-Cola a day. I would eat big, whole boxes of Little Debbie snack cakes a day. I would go to McDonald's. I should have bought stock in that company way back in the day because I spent so much money with them. I was a carbohydrate addict, probably upwards of 1,500 grams of carbohydrates I was consuming daily, mostly from sugary sodas. So when you come from that mentality and then suddenly you forget to eat, do you realize what a miracle that is?
Yeah, that's incredible.
And so it actually started by accident, the intermittent fasting. But then it became purposeful, and of course, you know, I wrote a whole book about it called The Complete Guide to Fasting with Dr. Jason Fung.
Right.
And in there we talk about not just intermittent fasting, but even like alternate day fasting and even some extended fasts, which I've now done three 21-day fasts You know, and it's a good thing to do once you've gotten your diet dialed in and you want to kind of see some added benefits. We can definitely get into more about fasting later, but yeah, it definitely is a part of this whole keto discussion.
Right. And we've had Dr. Fung on the radio too, and really appreciate all his work. But I was interested in, Jimmy, from 04 until what year were you just basically more the Atkins, not the necessarily high fat?
2012.
2012, okay. So from 4 till 12, those 8 years, what health-wise, you lost 180 pounds, you got off some meds, just overall we're feeling pretty good, just kind of cruise control mode for the rest of that until 12? Or were there still some challenges?
I didn't get off just some meds. I got off every one of those crazy medications I was on for high cholesterol. High blood pressure was the first one to go because I'd get up off the couch and I'd black out. And I'm like, okay, this ain't fun. And my wife's like, will you please stop taking that medication? I don't think you need it anymore. So that happened about 6 weeks into going Atkins. And then the breathing issues as well. I stopped wheezing, and so that went away within a couple months. And then I held on to the statin just for the longest time, just because I was like so scared of all the things I had heard about the Atkins diet being bad for your heart, blah, blah, blah. I now know that was silly. And I came off of that in 9 months, although I probably could have come off of it again. But I haven't taken any more medications since then, so that's good.
So we're talking 2005, you're off all your meds.
Oh, I was completely off of it by the end of 2004, like September's when I got off the statin. So yeah, it's been 13 years just about since I've had medication like that. So yeah, it wasn't all rosy. I mean, I think that's the myth about when you lose weight. Okay, you lose 180 pounds and you magically stay at that number for the rest of your life. Yeah, if only. And I think this is a good lesson for people to hear, is it's still a journey. You still have all of that metabolic underpinning that is going on there, what we now realize is insulin resistance. You know, I think back to the days that I used to drink 16 cans of Coca-Cola a day and all the junk food and everything that I was stuffing in this pie hole, that didn't come without consequence. And I think one of the things that our culture has taught about the whole calories and, oh, just keep your calories on, that is so wrong, because it totally ignores all these metabolic derangements that's happened in so many people from this crap that they've been putting in their mouth. And I still deal with this even to this day. So, yeah, in that period of time, I would have weight fluctuations. I would have, and of course, I was getting older. I turned 40 in the midst of that, and that's never fun. And so you have the challenges that arise, which makes you kind of tinker and tweak. And so 2011, I actually added in the paleo element to my low-carb diet. And then 2012, added in the keto element of my low-carb diet. And so I tell people now I eat primaleo ketogenic, because it's primal. I still have some dairy in there, some good quality dairy, full fat, of course. Paleo because it's real food, and ketogenic for the obvious reason.
Right. Well, and I do want to go back a little bit. I know probably most of your shows now, it's all about keto and fasting and all that, but maybe when we come back.
Oh, I talk about everything.
Okay. Well, when we come back from the break, I do want to touch on the cholesterol. That was your first book, correct? The Cholesterol Clarity?
The first with a major publisher, yes.
Okay. Because you mentioned the statins, and you kind of were fearful coming off those. We've had Dr. Jack Wolfson on the show to talk about that some, but I want to get
I love Jack.
Yeah, he's awesome. But, and I love your book because it quotes from so many great cardiologists. So we'll get into that when we come back from the break.
Welcome back to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD with Veritas Medical. Always check out the website, veritasmedical.com, for shows that hopefully get recorded.
I'm sorry, guys. Wade forgot the record button last week.
Yeah,
the second
only
half of the show.
Yeah, that was my bad. But nevertheless, you can check it out there, veritasmedical.com. But I am recording this next second half of the show for sure. But
thank you, Wade.
So our special guest on the program,
Jimmy Moore, author of Cholesterol Clarity, Keto Clarity, and a new book on fasting, The Complete Guide to Fasting. Is that what it is, Jimmy?
That's right.
Okay. Well, I want to go back a little bit over those statins and the book, Cholesterol Clarity. Again, I love that book so much. You quoted so many different studies, so many different cardiologists, because people hear me. I'm a family practice trained doc. So, yeah, they'll kind of listen to me until I start talking crazy stuff, like statins really aren't all they're cracked up to be, and there's a lot of potential downside to them. But when they hear it from a cardiologist, that's a whole different story. And that's what I love about your book. So talk a little bit about why you decided to, you know, the challenge you had personally with coming off statin, just mentally, that challenge, and then why'd you decide to write the book, and what were your main take-home messages from that research and that book?
Yeah, so I had always had joint pain, muscle ache, and all the kind of side effects that nobody really talks about when you hear a doctor say, oh, you need to go on a statin drug to lower your cholesterol. So that was one reason I was on both Lipitor and Crestor.
Wow.
When I started on the Atkins diet in 2004. Yeah, I tried Lipitor, and I had major issues. I went up for a rebound at my church. We were playing some basketball, and my thumb went straight backwards. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this isn't normal, and I'm in a lot of pain. So I drove myself to the ER, and they're like, you take a statin medication, don't you? And I went, what do you mean? And they said, oh, we're seeing a lot more injuries with people where their joints have gotten a little more loose because of those drugs. And I'm like, yikes. And so that kind of put the seed in my head that I needed to try to get off of these, but I was worried about my heart health. And so that's why when I went Atkins, I was like, why am I still taking this drug? I feel so much better. And coming off of that was probably the best thing I could have ever done for a lot of parts of my health. But all the joint pain and everything went away within about a month of coming off of those medications. So why did I want to write a book about cholesterol? It was probably inspired by my own family doctor. God bless him. A good guy, but he's so steeped in the conventional wisdom when it comes to medicine. I remember after losing the 180 pounds in 2004, and I go to see him for a physical in 2005, and I walk in, he had not seen me in a year. And he, oh my gosh, what did you do? And I said, oh, I did the I didn't want him to, I knew the first thing out of his mouth would be something bad, not good. And he's like, oh, we need to check your cholesterol. I was like, okay, I have nothing to hide. Let's check the cholesterol. So he runs it, and we get the numbers back, and I see that my HDL cholesterol was 72. Wow. I don't know what it was before because I didn't care when I was 410 pounds. But 72 was pretty good. Let's put it that way. My triglycerides were 43, which again, for anything under 100 is really good for triglycerides. Anything over 50 tends to be pretty good for HDL cholesterol. So I go in there real proud, and he's got this solemn look on his face. And I'm like, what's the problem? He said, oh, you need to go back on your statin again. I'm like, what are you talking about? My numbers are fantastic. And he said, oh, your LDL cholesterol is over 100. And it was like 170. And your total cholesterol is 240, you are at great risk for heart disease and heart attack. And I'm like, really? Do you see my body? Do I look like I've changed my life in any way?
Yeah.
And he was just adamant, because this whole notion that if you have numbers on a piece of paper that tell you that you're over or outside of some range, you are at great risk for heart disease. And that's how they get so many patients. I know there's people hearing me right now, like, yeah, my doc did the same thing. Guess what, guys? It's just not true.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about the cholesterol issue that really gets my goat, because it's unlike any other health marker. And you as a family doctor, you know this. All the other health markers, they look at percentiles for disease rate. So usually if something's in like the 75 to 80 percentile of numbers, okay, that person is starting to get into a greater risk factor for said disease. Guess what the percentile is for cholesterol? It's 50. The 50 percentile, which means they're trying to say half of the population is at great risk, the other half of the population is not at great risk, never mind the fact that some people in the bottom half population still have heart attacks and get heart disease, and a lot of people in the top half, which are supposedly at greater risk, don't.
Yeah.
And so it's one of these things that you can tell they've manipulated the numbers simply to sell more prescription medications. Oh, yeah, by the way, you guys, to the tune of $29 billion a year that they get from the stat drug sales. It's disgusting, and all predicated on this medication. And I'm not saying don't take your medication. Definitely talk with your doctor about it. Definitely read Cholesterol Clarity and read Chapter 5, where we really get in-depth about statins. But they have never been tested on women. So if you're a woman taking a statin drug, guess what? There's no evidence that that actually helps you. And the people that they have tested it on, they've tested it on people who have had some kind of a cardiovascular event of some sort. No healthy people have ever been tested that a statin drug actually prevents a heart attack. And, of course, now they're changing the message, Ben, where they're saying, oh, well, it's really not the cholesterol lowering. It's the inflammation lowering effect that helps. Yep. Of the statins now. And I'm like, no. You've been pushing the cholesterol lowering for right. so long. And you want an anti-inflammatory way to lower your cholesterol? Oh, yeah, by the way, a ketogenic diet does exactly that.
Exactly right. And I tell people that all the time. There's such a better way to lower inflammation than a statin. And I want to just real quick for the listeners, reiterate what Dr. Jack Wolfson said, the paleo cardiologist. He mentioned that, yes, of course, the statins lower LDL, but does that translate to decreased heart attack, stroke, death? And the studies that he was quoting said, yes, it does in certain populations, like those that have had a coronary event in men, and it's only about a 1% to 2%. So you're talking 7% down to 5%. So very minimal in that very specific group, but you increase your risk for type 2 diabetes, atherosclerosis, dementia, the joint muscle issues that Jimmy was mentioning. So there's a risk benefit, and that's why I so highly recommend my patients to get educated. And Cholesterol Clarity is the number one book I point to, because it's, yeah, your LDL is going to come down, but what's the point of that? Why do we want, the studies don't bear out that that's that beneficial. And I do also want to point out that the number one or the more predictive numbers on that basic cholesterol panel that most doctors are running, when you get your HDL triglyceride ratio down to about 2-to-1, meaning, you know, get your triglycerides down to about 100 and your HDL to up about 50, that's that 2-to-1 ratio. And as Jimmy just said with his numbers, he had flipped that. He was at 70 on HDL and his triglycerides were 1-to-2 in the opposite. They were down in the 40s. So that's the one thing I look at if someone brings me a standard cholesterol panel, is what's that HDL and triglyceride ratio? If we get it 2-to-1, that's has been shown in the studies to be a good predictor for health in heart health, that is. But then I really recommend a more expanded cholesterol panel, which you may want to get into also, that gives you more data, more information.
Can I just say one thing about something that's in the American diet that has been pushed on us for heart health that is exactly the opposite? It's actually going to make you more at risk for heart disease, and that's these vegetable oils.
Yeah.
In Cholesterol Clarity, we actually talk about carbohydrates being a great enemy in your heart health. Well, the other twin villain in your heart health is vegetable oils. Now, these are the canola oil and the corn oil and all these oils that are promoted as healthy. In fact, if you look at them, Ben, you'll see right there, it has the American Heart Health Heart Association health symbol right there.
Yeah, and so they just put out a statement a couple weeks ago pushing it even again.
Oh, yeah, they're digging their heels is what they're doing. They know keto is getting out there as a popular message, so they got to dig their heels in a little more. Right. But when I see those oils, all I can see is inflammation. And you want to know why they promote those so heavily? They do one thing on your cholesterol panel that doctors in general tend to see as a good thing. They do lower your LDL cholesterol. But how do they do that? It actually, and you were talking about these subclassifications of LDL, there's this great test up here just north of me in North Carolina called NMR lipoprofile test. It's from this company called LipoScience. There's other companies out there that do particle size testing, but I tend to like the NMR pretty well. And if you live in America or Canada, you actually can get this. The rest of the world, if you're listening, sorry, but you're in Lubbock, Texas, so all you guys can can get it. But ask your doctor for the NMR lipoprotein test, and you can also just say the particle size test. Most doctors will know that, and definitely Ben will know that. So run it, and you'll see your breakdown of the various LDL particles. And a lot of people don't realize that there is no just one LDL. People think, oh, LDL, bad. And it's like, no, there's actually good LDL and there's bad LDL. The bad LDL is the small, dense, BB-sized LDL particles that can penetrate the arterial wall. The good kind of LDL is the large, fluffy kind. And guess what happens when you eat a ketogenic diet? You shift most of your LDL over to that large, fluffy kind. Well, when you consume these vegetable oils, guess what happens to the large fluffy? They all go away.
Yep.
So that's how your LDL drops. And then, oh yeah, by the way, those small dense LDL particles get this nice little effect called oxidation. Think of rustiness on like a bicycle arms. And that's exactly what happens. And they become even more atherogenic. So you're consuming something that's making you at greater risk for heart disease, all with the blessing of the American Heart Association's heart health symbol right there on the front of the packaging.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And the beautiful thing is, this has just been my observation. When people start to eat a high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carb, and those triglycerides just drop to the floor. So they come into my office, they're eating standard American, their triglycerides are 280. LDL could be all over the place, HDLs are low. But then it's like guaranteed, and their particles are the small dense, the LDL particles, small dense BBs, the pro-inflammatory. But it's almost a guarantee. The triglycerides drop to the floor, the HDL goes up, and the particles flip from BBs to big fluffy. It's just like guaranteed. It's to the point where I'm almost thinking in some patients who are financially strapped, I don't think I'm even going to check it. Just save you a buck because I know this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Or just check the triglyceride only. Because it's so guaranteed. And I remember back in my former life, a regular medical doctor, family practitioner, before I learned all this, I would bang my head against the wall trying to figure out, how can I move these numbers? How can I budge these triglycerides? And now it's guaranteed they drop to the floor when you eat high fat. So it is
awesome.
And
there's no drug that will move them. There is no drug that will move the HDL up and the triglycerides down better than a ketogenic diet.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So anyone on a statin or that has questions, I know a lot of what we're saying is a totally opposite of maybe what your doctor's preaching, what your cardiologist is preaching, but get a copy of the book, read it, get informed. Again, like at the top of the show, I mentioned the U.S. healthcare system does not have a good track record for producing good outcomes, so we need to start questioning our whole mindset in this whole thing. So get the book, read it, even take it to your doctor to read. Hopefully he'll be open-minded and read it and shift his thinking. Did we have a question come in on the text, Wade?
Yeah, there was a quick question for you guys, and it was the question was, my wife has had bad anxiety and was taking Prozac, but she's trying to wean herself off because she thinks that it might be making her worse. She was also on birth control, but has since stopped taking that too because she thinks both medicines could be counter-interacting with each other. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let me give a little answer to that, but then we'll blend it over to how the diet and ketogenic and what we're talking about with Jimmy could, because it is all related. The gut, 80% of your neurotransmitters are made in the gut. Serotonin is the one that Prozac's working on. What we know with these serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the way they work is they allow the serotonin to sit out there in that little cleft, the little space in between your nerve endings. Normally what happens, serotonin squirts out of one nerve ending, talks to your next nerve ending, and then the serotonin gets soaked right back up into its original nerve ending. And what this drug does is just inhibit that reuptake or that soaking back in. So the serotonin sits out there in that space and actually gets broken down more rapidly. So over time, your overall serotonin levels go down. But 80% of your serotonin is made in the gut, and the gut bacteria play a key role in forming these neurotransmitters. So you've got to nourish your gut flora, which birth control kills your gut flora, amongst other things. Birth control has a number of detrimental things to your health, but it can adversely affect your gut flora. So when someone comes into my office with anxiety, depression, of course we look at a lot of things, but one of the first things we go to is the diet. You know, what's your gut doing? What's your gut health? What's your probiotic health? Because that's a key to the brain. The brain's called the or excuse me, there's a second brain in the human body, and it's in the gut. It's called the enteric nervous system. So there's so much neurological activity going on in the gut that directly communicates to the brain. So it's a delicate and intricate connection between the gut and the brain. You know, I can't say specifically with this caller or the person that texted, because obviously they're not a patient, but definitely I would encourage them to consider eating real food, number one, and then shifting more to what we're talking about here today, a high-fat, moderate protein, low-carb, getting some fermented food in, because you want to nourish that gut flora. When the gut's healthy, the brain can be healthy. But Jimmy, I want to kick it to you. You know, that's a question that people think, well, that has nothing to do with today's show. It's birth control and Prozac and anxiety. But matter of fact, it can. And I want to get your experience from all the people you have talked to, dealt with, and you personally even. When you start to get the gut healthy, not only does the cholesterol get better and the blood pressure and the blood sugar and all the metabolic syndrome stuff, but talk about give us some insight and input from your perspective as far as brain health, mood, stuff like that.
So it's going to sound like I'm about to insult your audience there in Lubbock, Texas, but stick with me, you guys. You're all a bunch of fatheads. And so am I, and so is everybody here today. We are all fatheads. And did you know, like, 70% of your brain is composed of fat? And so if you're depriving your body of fat by eating a low-fat diet or not eating enough fat in your diet, you're actually making problems with your brain worse. So anxiety and some of the mental health issues that tend to pop up in people, and I think about these people who go on crazed rampages, I always want to know, did they have enough fat in their diet? I wonder.
Yeah.
So one of those things that a ketogenic diet helps with immensely, because you eat more fat in the diet, is the brain. And so what actually happens is the brain can be fueled by glucose primarily, or by ketones primarily. And do you know which source it actually prefers? It actually prefers to run on ketones. And so that's why shifting over from that standard American diet, or even a low-fat diet that's sort of healthy, over to a real foods-based ketogenic diet, it takes about a 2 to 4 week period. But once you get that transition in, you're able to experience immense brain health. One of the things that kind of shocked me when I first went keto in 2012 was how calm I got all of a sudden. Not that I was one of these like nervous Nelly people, but I just noticed I just was always in a pretty calm sense, and my brain was pretty sharp. So I'd be doing radio interviews like this one, and I'd be like, well, dang, who just said that? Because that was pretty profound. And I was just so lucid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those kinds of benefits that you don't really pay attention to that you're having an issue with until you have like that afternoon brain fog after you eat lunch, and you just kind of go blah, you can't remember things. That's the power of nutrition on your brain. And so go keto. It definitely will make a huge impact. And I tell people often, if I got no weight loss benefits, if I got no other health benefits from eating a ketogenic diet, I would do it alone for the brain health benefits.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's one of the top things I see when patients come back in a month or two for a follow-up, is their brain fog, their memory and brain fog has cleared up. So listeners, just realize a lot of times mood, depression, anxiety, memory, brain fog, these are symptoms of brain inflammation. You know, the brain doesn't really have nerve endings that tell you pain so much. So when there's inflammation there, it'll come out and manifest in these other symptoms like brain fog or anxiety. But that inflammation, Jimmy talked about, the brain can burn glucose, which is sugar, for fuel, or it can burn ketones for fuel. When you burn sugar for fuel, not just in your brain, but anywhere in your body, that's a dirtier burning fuel. So the byproducts of sugar metabolism, or burning sugar or glucose for fuel, is more pro-inflammatory. When you burn ketones or fat for fuel, the byproduct of that process, it's almost like you got a vehicle that can burn gas or electric, and you flip a switch, and the byproducts come out of the tailpipe. Those are the pro-inflammatory byproducts when you burn sugar. So many different health benefits. We're going to have Dr. Nasha Winters on next week. She wrote a book called cancer is a metabolic disease, I believe. Or no, the metabolic cure to cancer. But bottom line, keto potentiated therapy, the ketogenic diet, is used as a cancer therapy, partly because of this reason, because of the anti-inflammatory effect in your cells, your mitochondria, which is, it appears now to be where the seed of cancer really starts from, not your DNA, not your genes, but your mitochondria. We'll talk about that next week. But I'm just making the point, there's
back
so many
the brain
health benefits.
Just real quick on the brain health thing, the Alzheimer's disease we've always thought was a genetic condition. They're now starting to refer to Alzheimer's disease as type 3 diabetes. What's funny is I actually had somebody on my Live and La Vida Low Carb Show podcast way back in 2007. So this is over 10 years ago that Dr. Larry McCleary was on there, and he kind of dropped that. He's like, oh yeah, in research circles, it's commonly referred to Alzheimer's as type 3 diabetes. And I'm like, what? It was so revolutionary, and it still kind of shocks people because it puts it in perspective that diet does matter in your brain health, because diet is the most powerful modality for treating diabetes.
Yep, exactly right. Well, I kind of want to spend this last 8 minutes or so of the show with some of your real-world experiences, some of the challenges, some of the take-homes. And one thing you said earlier in the show is there's some individuality to this. So, and that's what I want listeners to understand. It's not a one-size-fits-all. There's these basic concepts. Eat real food, number one, instead of processed food out of a package. Eat like your great-grandparents used to. And then as far as the number of grams of carbs and protein and all this, you've got to listen to your body. You've got to watch your health markers on your blood work. There's a spectrum in there because everyone's so individual. But, Jimmy, talk about some of the ups and downs or some of the challenges or the things you've learned. I mean, this is what, I mean, we're talking 12, 13, 14 years now of you doing this and talking about it every week on your show and everything. Where are you at now? What you're thinking now? What has shifted in those 10 to 12 years? Kind of talk in that realm.
Yeah, I could actually write a book about this whole subject right here. So I think one of the things I want people to hear loud and clear is go get a glucometer. Go get ways to test your progress, because I think the future of medicine is going to be individuals taking back control of their own health, what I like to refer to as empowered patients, and you as the empowered patient will go see Dr. Edwards, for example, and say, okay, here's all my latest readings, help me analyze this as a consultant in my health. Yep. And Ben, you're happy to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
In fact,
I love
you would probably welcome that.
That is our goal for every patient. Yeah, take control of their own health, bring us data, and we'll give you some thoughts.
And so I think a lot of people have white coat syndrome, and this is one thing that I've really changed my thinking on, is like, oh, go to your doctor and consult with them. No, you do your own research. You listen to podcasts like mine and listen to shows like this one. Get educated, because unfortunately, your doctor, maybe if they were lucky, got a couple of weeks of nutritional health training, and that's it. They don't have a lot of education in this. So you can educate your doctors about this. And so that's one thing that I've tried to do with my doctor. He's changed quite a bit since that time he wanted to know about my cholesterol. After I lost my weight, he added in the NMR as one of the tests that he would run because of me. And he started checking for various things. Now, he still has to follow the Obamacare rules and all that kind of stuff, so he doesn't always check insulin anymore, so I have to remind him, I want fasting insulin checks. So you just have to stay on him or her and let them know that you care about your health. And so that's one thing that I've done, is I track a lot of things. I've got a glucometer. If you want to know your carb tolerance to something, test your blood sugar before you eat it, then test it like 1 hour postprandial. And if that went, postprandial means after you ate. And so if at that reading you have a very high jump in your blood sugar, let's say it went from 90 to 130, that's not a good response.
Yeah.
So you want to test that. In fact, I just got a continuous blood glucose monitor, so I'm going to be wearing that myself just to kind of keep an eye on my health. And I think with all the gadgets and gadgetry that's out there now, Ben, it's ludicrous for a patient not to at least care enough about their health to kind of know where they are. And what really drives me crazy is I get emails from people And I tell them, you know, have you tested insulin? Have you? Oh, no, I'm afraid of what I'm going to find. I'm like, more afraid than not knowing what it is?
Yeah, ignorance is bliss.
Oh, my goodness. And so I think my message these days through the evolution of the last 12, 13 years has been, you got to take control of your health. Not that your doctor doesn't care about you, but that you have to care about you more than anybody else.
Yeah.
And there's so many things. I've got literally gadgets upon gadgets for testing all kinds of things on myself. You can go down to Walgreens, Rite Aid, CVS, all these stores now, and they got all kind of little ways, A1C checker, and they got all of these really great ways to kind of track your own health. And if you're not already tracking your health, track your own health, because I think at the end of the day, we can't always rely on the mainstream medicine to treat us well, vis-a-vis the statins as a great example of that. So we have to take back control of our own health, and that's where a ketogenic diet helps, because a lot of these numbers will come in line when you start eating this way, and you won't have to worry about testing so obsessively forever, but at least keep track of it and know where you stand.
Yeah, I concur 100%. And I want to just explain to the listeners, I mean, I'm an MD. I was trained conventionally, graduated from UT Houston in 2002. And now looking back, kind of my take on it is, somewhere in some ivory tower at some point years ago, someone decided for the public that the public isn't going to do what Jimmy just said to do. They're not going to take control of their own health. They're not going to check their own blood sugar even when they're not diabetic. They're not going to do any of this stuff to help themselves. So either they're going to suffer and die early, or let's throw some drugs at them. So someone just put it down to those two categories, do nothing and suffer, or treat symptoms with medications, and we'll see what happens. Now, after 70 years of doing that, what happened is we're the number three leading cause of death. Doctors are on prescription drugs, and our outcomes are the worst in the world. But those are the options. And this third option of the patient take charge of their own health, get educated, and change their diet and lifestyle, which is at the root of cancer and heart disease, your top two killers. That option is just taken off the table at some point. So it's like doctors are just trained with that thought process of, there's no way a patient's going to go read cholesterol, clarity, bioglucometer, and do these things we're talking about. But that's what we're telling everyone to do. The time has come to do this. Now, hopefully your doctor will come alongside you like Jimmy's did and open his mind and see, wow, this is cool, and want to learn some of it. Unfortunately, doctors are super busy in the world we live in. 7 minutes per visit is your average PCP visit. So it's a challenge for sure with your doc, but don't bail out on it. Do just like Jimmy said. Start taking charge of your own stuff. Bring the data to your doctor, and they hopefully will start to listen. But Jimmy, we got 3 minutes. I want the listeners to hear from you on what a day in the life of Jimmy Moore looks like from the standpoint of diet. I mean, people always are asking me, okay, what do you eat, Doc? What do you eat? Tell me exactly. They want a plan or something. And the beauty of it is, yeah, I don't even think about it really anymore. Half the time I'm not hungry. The other half the time I just grab real food. That's my marker. Is it real food, and is it low carb? Basically, it's kind of easy. But give me your perspective on that.
People love asking this question, and I'm like, there is no set meal plan, so I have no idea. I can tell you I have 11 chickens in my backyard. Give me about 8 eggs a day that are fresh and beautiful, and I've got a burgeoning front yard garden that I'll grab fresh vegetables from, and then I adjunct that with some grass-fed butter. I'll have some grass-fed beef. In fact, later today I'm going to make a meatloaf out of pastured pork sausage as well as some grass-fed beef. And I'll put a little almond flour in there to make some breadcrumbs, quote-unquote breadcrumbs, and then a paleo ketchup that I found at Whole Foods. So, yeah, you get creative. And this is another misnomer. People think, oh, you have to have this gourmet dinner, you know, every meal. And it's like, no, just eat food. Like yesterday, I made up a whole bunch of deviled eggs. And so used my chicken eggs and mixed them with some, avocado oil, mayonnaise and mustard and onions and the relish and all that stuff. And so now I just pop those in my mouth. That's what I had this morning for breakfast. Was about 4 or 5 of those, and I'm completely satisfied eating those. So I don't have a set meal plan. I will tell you this. I eat probably 1 to 2 times a day. So today, knowing I had this radio interview, I had those 4 or 5 eggs pretty quick. And I'll probably eat something about 8 or 9 hours from now, and that'll be all I eat the whole day. And so it's definitely a moderate amount of meat, so I can have maybe 5 ounce steak or a 5 ounce burger, 4 or 5 ounce burger, something like that. And I'll put fat on top of that. So avocado, I got some avocados that are about to spoil if I don't eat them soon. Cooked in butter, having some grass-fed cheese on top as well. You just live. And I think that's the thing that makes this so easy. It's not complicated. You don't have to make any kind of gourmet special foods. You just eat real food, and the rest takes care of itself.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're eating a higher fat and a nutrient-dense food, your body's satisfied. It's totally satisfied.
Yeah.
So that 8 or 9 hours you mentioned, it's not like you're purposely having to deprive yourself. You're not hungry.
Not at all.
Just go, and your brain's firing off great. Your energy's great. And like you said earlier in the show, you'll just forget to eat. And that's good, and that's normal, and that's how cultures have eaten forever and ever and ever until we've decided to try to eat 6 meals a day the past 30 or 40 years preaching that kind of nonsense. So
yes. Your bumper music earlier was very appropriate. Uh-oh, it's magic. That was awesome.
Well, and the last thing I want to say...
You didn't think I caught that, did you? Didn't think I caught that.
No, I did. That's good, Jimmy. Your brain is firing off. This whole thing, it's just freeing. When you eat this way, it's freeing. It's not restraining or restrictive or cumbersome or hard. It's how we've always eaten. And it allows you to just be who God made you to be, really, and not be so tied down and constrained by, I got to go to the gym and burn more out than I just put in, and your brain starved for fat because you're not eating fat. And so it's just a more beneficial way to steward your health. So, Jimmy, thank you for all you've done. I know you've spent years and years doing this. Hope you're not getting burnt out because you're still reaching a lot of lives, helping a lot of people. I know most of our listeners probably didn't even know about you. So we're going to get more of these books sold out here in West Texas and keep the real food, ketogenic kind of eating plan pushing forward across the country and get this country turned around from a health perspective. So thank you so much for leading the charge and being who you are.
Thank you, and keep on living La Vida Low Carb.
All right, will do. Again, that was Jimmy Moore. Check out his podcast, Living La Vida Low Carb. Check out his book, Cholesterol Clarity and Keto Clarity and The Complete Guide to Fasting. And we'll be back next week.
Thanks, Jimmy. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Edwards, appreciate it. Of course, we'll see you back here next Monday right here on You're the Cure. Check out VeritasMedical.com. VeritasMedical.com. Unconfused, up next right here on AM 580.